Welcome to the Veterans for Peace podcast. Today we are going to talk drones with returning guests Toby Blome, Colonel Ann Wright, and Ken Mayers. But before we get going with Toby, Ann, and Ken, I need to mention something about the latest school shooting because this one happened near where I live. Not that that makes it any more important than the rest of them over the decades, but as a grandfather with grandchildren in first and fourth grade, hearing the news that there was a school shooting underway in the Nashville area sent fear throughout my body. As more information came out that the shooting was not at my grandkids' school, but the children were dead at another school, that fear turned to overwhelming anger. Again, I asked God, what the heck are you doing? Leaving me standing, me, this 73-year-old, leaving me alive while 9-year-olds are dead. I just don't get it. Then my anger turned toward the country and the community. Because once again, we will have the appropriate memorial services, candlelight vigils, teddy bears, but we'll also have politicians condemning the shootings, but then doing nothing, or passing it on to another branch of government to do something. Now, the mayor of Nashville was honest and courageous when he said, the problem is guns. I appreciated that. But we know that it's primarily Republicans and maybe a couple of Democrats who continue to value a gun more than a 9-year-old. I called my senators and my representative. I called Blackburn, Haggerty, and Green because I felt I just had to. I had to do something. But they're not going to do anything about it. So why do we continue to vote for these people? Why? The solution is so clear. If these people are not going to represent us and do something about guns, they got to go. They got to go. Okay. Now on with our discussion about another weapon that indiscriminately kills children. American drones. Today we're going to talk drones with returning guest Toby Blome. She's been a drone activist for years and coordinating protests. She's also a member of Code Pink. We've also got Colonel Ann Wright, retired colonel who quit because of the invasion of Iraq. Right, Ann?
Well, yes, I was a diplomat at that time and resigned in opposition to the war on Iraq.
Okay, resigned in opposition. And we've got Ken Mayers, member of the board of Veterans for Peace, longtime member of Veterans for Peace, and he was a major in the Marine Corps. So welcome, everybody. Thanks for talking about drones. And we're going to get right to it. So, Toby, you wanted to talk about your next protest. But this time, you're not going to be in Creech. Where you move to, why you move the protest?
Sure. Actually, probably less than 6 months ago, I found out that Creech Air Force Base, where we've been protesting for 14 years, had moved their drone training, the training of their drone operators and pilots, down to southern New Mexico. And we had wondered why the number of cars going into the base had been declining over a few years. So when I started doing some research right directly on the website of the Holloman Air Force Base in southern New Mexico, I found out that they were graduating over 600 pilots, drone pilots and drone operators every year, and that it was the largest drone training base in the country. So I felt that we should divide our energy between Creech, which is kind of a central control base in the U.S. drone program, and try to expand our campaign at Holloman. And thank goodness that Ken Mayers joined this effort, who lives in Santa Fe, New Mexico, because he's been one of our team members and organizing it, and he's just amazing. He's done so much work to help it be successful. I'm sure it will be.
So, Ken, why did you jump in and help?
Because Toby asked me to.
Good reason.
I first heard about the then tentative plan to move the spring mobilization to New Mexico. Oh, I think about 6 months ago. So, and at the time I was skeptical because Holloman is in the southeast corner of New Mexico. In part of New Mexico is which is regarded both by many New Mexicans and by many Texans as being part of Texas rather than being part of New Mexico. It's outside of Alamogordo, New Mexico, which you may remember was the closest large town to the Trinity blast in July of 1945. And it's on the edge of the White Missile of the White Sands missile testing range. And it's not an easy place to get to necessarily. The easiest way is to fly into El Paso, and then it's an hour and a half drive from El Paso. So I didn't jump on the opportunity immediately, but then as the idea matured and Toby approached those of us in the Santa Fe chapter of Veterans for Peace and folks in the Albuquerque chapter of Veterans for Peace, which are the two closest chapters to the site of the action, I found I couldn't say no. So here I am doing what I can. I went down and did a reconnaissance a couple of weeks ago to get more familiar with the area. And very much looking forward to the activities now.
Very good, very good. And you're all over the place. You just had a meeting with Medea Benjamin, and you live in Hawaii, but you're actually in Texas. So you're going to be able to participate in this.
Well, normally I would, because I really appreciate what Toby and all of the teams have done over the many years. So I try to get to each one of the shutdown Creech events. However, this time I'm having a knee replacement, dadgummit. So I won't be there, but I'll be there in spirit for sure. Because this is a really an exciting time to go to a new place and to show them, a lot of Americans don't agree with this assassin drone program. And as we see the program expanding out in the Pacific where I live, we now have six assassin drones that are assigned in Hawaii and six more that will be in Guam as a part of the U.S. China is our enemy program, where we say China is not our enemy and we don't want all this militarization to include those assassin drones.
Okay, so you've been coming to these protests for years and years, and so you've seen the importance of it for years and years. So what caught your eye as far as drones and wanting to participate and spread the word, educate the public?
Well, hearing the horrific things that our drones have done and seeing them slowly but surely as footage came out of the U.S. military of us actually watching drones obliterate families and in Afghanistan and Pakistan and Yemen and all of these places. In fact, Toby and I have been to these places and have talked with victims and survivors and families of victims of these assassin drone attacks. Are reasons why I join with Shut Down Creech and Ban the Killer Drones and all of the organizations that we have to make sure that we are alerting our own communities that these things are in the communities, that people are training on them, and the people that live next door to them may be killers, that they are the ones on behalf of the United States military that are killing people around the world. And that's wrong, and that's why I joined to say we need to shut these bases down.
I bet you a lot of people don't have, and anybody can jump in here, but I bet you a lot of people don't have just the idea of how widespread the drone program is. How widespread is our drone program? I mean, Anne, you just brought up about the drones being deployed in the Pacific. Where else?
They're deployed all around the world. There are deployments in many of the countries in Africa that most Americans would never be able to pick out on a map. They're most obviously employed by the U.S. In this over-the-horizon continued warfare against the Taliban in Afghanistan. And of course, it's not only the U.S. now that's using the drones. Drones are an important element in the warfare going on in the Ukraine.
We recently had a confrontation between a drone and a Russian fighter, right?
That's correct. Over some so-called international waters.
I apologize for interrupting. I thought you were done. I just wanted to share something I just heard in a radio interview by Nick Modern. Don Kimball was the interviewer. And he said that drone crews, he quoted from an article, drone crews have launched more missiles and killed more people in the last decade than I think it was any other major branch of the U.S. military. And yet the military doesn't count the drone operators as combat troops, but yet they've fired more missiles and killed more people. So that kind of wakes us up to the reality that the U.S. is doing their combat warfare more and more, and it's moving more in that direction as we build more drone bases around the world. And we need to stop it, yeah.
If I could add to that, the different military services are wanting to get in on the action. You know, normally it had been the CIA and the Air Force, but the drones that are coming out to the Pacific are for the Marine Corps. The Marines have never had these things before. And it turns out the Army is getting assassin drones too. So all of the military services want to have these things, and the proliferation of them within the military, and of course the continual use by the CIA of the drones that we don't really hear much about, but I'm sure that they're still doing their little nefarious things, perhaps, as Ken mentioned, in Africa, in Mali and Niger, where we've had U.S. military bases before, and particularly a drone base in Niger.
So being in the Navy and being reflective on how well the different branches of service coordinate with each other, meaning not at all, if every one of the services has drones, what's that going to look like? Are we going to have mid-air collisions?
Actually, in theaters of operations where there are overt combat going on, there's always a joint operations center where these things are coordinated, and they're pretty amazing operations. I mean, this started back in World War II when they set these up to coordinate naval gunfire with aviation support for troops and so on. So it's pretty sophisticated. The whole drone program is extremely sophisticated. And most Americans don't pay any attention to what's going on, unfortunately. And the ones who do, probably for the most part, are only aware of the bombing strikes by drones. Mm-hmm. But you know, these drones can stay overhead for 24 hours, and it's a continual terrorization of the population below, even if they're not dropping bombs. There's the conscious awareness that at any minute, the ground in front of you may explode from a Hellfire missile. And so that the psychological impact of the drone program is even greater than the physical impact of the drone program. You go interview people in any of these countries which is subject to this kind of surveillance. There have been studies done that show that like 90% of the population demonstrate symptoms of PTSD just from the drones being overhead all the time.
Just because they can hear them.
The other aspect of the expansion of the U.S. drone program is that it's making it easier for the U.S. empire to be more and more violent in the world and at the same time get away with it, because we don't have the soldiers coming back with injuries and dying. And so that's another reason why we as American citizens with conscience need to step up, because we shouldn't allow our government to be so violent in the world. We need to, because it's gonna, and if, as we become more violent, as the US becomes more violent, then China and Russia and all these other countries, they need to build up their drone program. And it's just becoming a world of an insane world, really. And the ultimate danger of it all is that it increases the risk for a major nuclear confrontation. Mm-hmm. So it puts all the entire world at risk. And I'm sure Anne could say something about the recent incident with the drone that was flying near the Soviet, the Russian border, and what that could have led to, right, Anne?
Surely, yes. Well, the United States flying its drones out in the waters around Crimea, and the Russian military forces saying, well, you're actually in what we've declared an operational zone, which is what the U.S. does too. Wherever U.S. forces are, they immediately put up a zone saying nobody should fly in here because we're killing people in here. You know, and so the Russians did the same thing, and then the U.S. decided to send a drone into that space that the Russians had already declared. Even the U.S. of course said it's international waters, you can't do that, but we do it all the time. We the U.S. do it all the time, and so here came that Russian jet and dumped fuel on it, and somehow bumped it, and that was the end of that drone. It bit the dust, or bit the waters off Crimea. And the fact that the Russians went after our drone means that the probability of the U.S. going after a Russian drone found in, you know, who knows where the waters will be, is pretty high. I think mm-hmm. the retaliation that our military forces see, and we saw that in Syria, where the Syrians sent a rocket into one of the U.S. bases. I mean, most Americans don't realize that we have two U.S. military bases in Syria, in a country that the U.S. doesn't recognize the government, and has had large scale operations over the years. And most people think, well, they're out of there, but they're not. They're up around the oil rich areas of Syria, protecting the oil that goes now into U.S. allies. Well, it appears that the Iranians may have sent a rocket over the border, because they're right next to Syria. And tragically, it hit a U.S. base and killed one U.S. military contractor, and wounded some U.S. And so very quickly, the U.S. then retaliated with a barrage of rockets in a Syrian base where Syrians and probably Iranians were. So, you know, this tit for tat that can start out with a plane in contested airspace can lead to a lot of different things. I'll also mention, as Ken said, you know, these assassin drones that have a 24-hour capability of staying aloft, because they're not jet powered. Normally they do have a couple of jet powered. Most of them are propeller driven. They go slowly, about 200 miles an hour. They can stay up a long time. But for the first time, the U.S. has refueled jets to be able to have them fly completely across the Pacific, through over Hawaii and then on to Guam. And the first large-scale refueling operation that they've ever done with these slow-flying drones. So it means that these things can be, as the Marines want to use them, to put them out on small islands in the Pacific and kind of wait for enemies to come past. And then they'll have those drones out there that they can just fly up real fast, see where enemy ships are, and blast them with the Hellfire missiles.
Good Lord. But so far, there have been no nuclear-armed drones.
That's correct. Yeah.
Do you see that coming?
We hope not.
Because
they're definitely doing research and development in that area, is my understanding. And I don't know how far along they are with it, but it's a frightening thought, really.
It is a frightening thought. So the key for this upcoming protest, and Toby, when is the protest? And how do people join? How do people get information if they want to join?
Well, the way to get information is go to our website, shutdowndronewarfare.org. And there's all kinds of information on there. Why we're going there for a week, and all the wonderful activities that we're planning, thanks to Ken Mayers, who's worked really hard to bring great speakers. And we have an indigenous spiritual leader, Four Arrows, is going to give a workshop. He's also going to speak at our panel. We got wonderful speakers that are Native New Mexicans. One who's from the Acoma Pueblo, who has directly involved with the consequences of uranium mining in New Mexico and how that's helped harmed their people and their communities. And another speaker who is a direct victim of the Trinity test from 1945, whose family suffered terribly. There's horrible cancer rates in the area where the first nuclear bomb exploded in 1945 at Trinity. And so I'm really looking forward to all of those speakers speaking at our panel. I'll be saying some words about the drone program. We wanted to have Anne Wright there, but she can't make it, unfortunately. She was going to join us, and then for other reasons she couldn't come. But we're providing, there's a group campsite most of us are staying at. It's going to be very inexpensive to stay at the campsite, and we're providing all the meals, so we're just asking for a small donation per day, which is really affordable. And even if you can't get to Creech on your own, we still have some travel stipend money. People want to reach out for help with gasoline or plane fare, contact us. Our contact information is on shutdowndronewarfare.org. And we're going to have vigils every day, twice a day in the morning and the afternoons during commute hours, with really well thought out banners to try to communicate to the people in the base that we can't tolerate the drone program. And we're asking them to come on the side of peace and to listen to their conscience, because they suffer from horrible moral injury, and we don't want them to be victims themselves of the program. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, I'll let Ken talk about Wednesday, which is our big day.
Well, Wednesday we will have, without going into any detail for obvious reasons, we will have an opportunity for nonviolent direct action with a risk of arrest, in hopes of generating sufficient public attention. Diane, thanks for being with us.
Well, yeah. Thank you all very much. And I know you're going to talk about a lot more, and I wish everyone luck. My heart will be with you, my spirit with you. Thank you.
Thanks, Anne.
Love you, Anne.
Love you. Bye. All.
Yeah. Anne and I got arrested at Creech, where we persuaded Barry Ladendorf, who was then the president of Veterans for Peace, to get arrested with us. So this is sort of a celebration of that event. Anyway, there will be the opportunity for those who are so inclined to engage in direct action, nonviolent. We always emphasize nonviolent, and for us, nonviolent includes violence against property. That we would not. We really urgently request that the participants in our nonviolent direct action not damage property in the process. Mm-hmm. So that will be happening on Wednesday. I've actually had a conversation with the Sheriff's Department at Alamogordo, and they assured us that anyone arrested during our week there would be released the following morning. That's important to us because the panel event is on Thursday, and we all want to attend the panel event. So as Toby said, there's a lot going on. There will be a variety of workshops taking place out of the group campsite primarily.
The workshops are going to be outside, basically.
Yes, the group campsite has a large tented area or canopied area, which would be the site of most of the workshops. The weather in Alamogordo in April is generally pleasant, but of course, weather is unpredictable, so there are no guarantees. But there's also plans to show a movie on Monday night, actually maybe a movie and a half. We're going to show at least part of National Bird, which is the most complete documentary film on it. And for anyone who wants a quick tutorial on drones in general, I highly recommend you can go to the website for National Bird and download a copy of their discussion tutorial, because it has an excellent interview of aspects of the drone program, which, for example, I, for one, was certainly not aware that drones are generally organized in patrols of 4 to 6 drones, and that the team that operates a drone goes far beyond just a pilot. I mean, there's the pilot, there's the image specialist who's the one who's most likely impacted by moral injury, because they're the ones who can really see what's happening on the ground, and they advise the pilot about what's in the target zone and whether or not it's safe to fly. But the pilot has the last word, and the pilots sometimes will just say, "Nope, I'm going to shoot," even if the image analyst advises not to. And there are all kinds of other technicians involved. There are signals analysts who are the ones who track potential high-value targets so they can identify where the drone area is. So it's a complex operation and very sophisticated, as I say, that involves far beyond the occasional bombing, more than occasional bombing, unfortunately.
Unfortunately. Ken just brought up National Bird. And if anybody has not seen that movie, it is really important as far as just getting up to speed, even though it's got a little age on it. It's really important as far as seeing the effects of these drones. And one of the key participants in the movie is Daniel Hale. Before I forget, what's the latest on Daniel Hale?
Well, can we say a few words about Daniel Hale? Because there may be some listeners that don't know anything about him.
Please.
Yeah. So Daniel Hale was featured in this film. And at the time when I saw the film, it came out in 2016, he was identified as an intelligence analyst in the drone program. And I have to confess, even though I'd been doing it for years, I really didn't have a clear picture of what that meant. But what that meant was that his job as a young man, he was a backdoor draftee. He didn't have a lot of opportunity as a young man, and so he joined the Air Force to have some opportunity. And he was pushed into this drone program, and as a young man, he was asked to to analyze data coming in from these drones that are flying all over these countries, and having the responsibility of deciding, you know, like who should be the target, or is this the right target? And in the course of doing all of this, he witnessed so many times a high rate of civilian casualties, and he was really troubled. And so he took the chance to be part of this film at a time when there was some a leak to The Intercept about the drone program that was probably the largest leak about the U.S. drone program ever given. And so at the time, we didn't know that Daniel Hale was the one responsible for this leak, but it was a really important leak. If any listener can go to the computer and put in the drone papers, and you'll get all of the military documents that go into detail about what the U.S. drone program is about. And what is especially revealed is the high rate of civilian deaths, even by military data collection. And they don't usually collect detailed data about civilian deaths, but it revealed that 9 out of 10 people killed by U.S. drones are the unintended target. So the U.S. is willing to continue this program, knowing that 9 out of 10 people killed are not the intended target. And I like to challenge that even the one that is the intended target, I don't trust the United States to decide who should be assassinated and who shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. I think every human being has a right for a trial before they're sentenced to death. And I don't really believe in execution anyway. So that even that is a wrongful killing. And but anyway, Daniel Hale, he leaked these documents, then he made the film, and then he was they finally traced the leak to him, and he faced a trial, and he was ultimately sentenced to 45 months in prison. He's in a very high security prison in Marion, Illinois, and according to his lawyer that's represented him, he's got more restrictions than even a prisoner on death row. And I wanted to read it, since we're talking about Daniel Hale, a quote by him. It's just a short quote. He said at his trial, "I believe it is wrong to kill, but it is especially wrong to kill the defenseless." And that's what motivates me the most about this, is that most of the people that we're killing people who are unable to even defend themselves. Even the militants that we kill, they don't have an air force. They have no way of having any kind of fair battle with U.S. military. So they are defenseless too. So they're sitting ducks on the ground whenever the U.S. decides to assassinate someone. But anyway, you can go to standwithdanielhale.org, and you can find out how to write letters to him. He really welcomes letters from people. It's really tough being in prison. I've only had to spend at the most a night in prison in my civil disobedience, nonviolent protests, but I can't imagine spending months and even years in a prison. So, yeah.
So Toby, you mentioned moral injury. Do you have any data information about the effects of these drone operators, what they're suffering through after participating in this? I mean, as Ken mentioned, you have like three people involved. Well, first of all, what rank and what age are these people typically? And then what's been the result?
Well, this is the saddest part of the story, is that the people that the U.S. military targets to recruit into the program are the ones that haven't even fully matured. They're the 19, 20, 21-year-olds that like to play video games. They haven't matured into full human beings, and they're suddenly forced into this program that maybe they think is going to be cool. They're going to go kill the bad guys in the world, and then they get stuck in there and they witness all these civilians being killed, and they have to live with that, and they suffer severe psychological, spiritual, emotional wounds from it. And even the drone whistleblowers, thank goodness, the ones who've been brave enough to come out and tell the truth, it's clear, like in the movie National Bird, as you said, that the drone whistleblowers themselves are really suffering from moral injury. And they probably will on some level for much of their life. And so our work at the drone bases to try to stop the drone program is also for them, because we see them as victims. And we want to bring them on the side and help them find alternatives and help them get out of the program as much as we're able to. And I'm sure Ken has a lot to say about that also. Ken, what do you think?
Well, not much more than you've already said. And I think it's going to be interesting to see over the years, as you well know, that there are many more victims of suicide among Vietnam veterans than there are names on the wall. And I think that's going to be true of drone operators as well, especially of those image analysts who see what they've done. We had a member in our chapter for some years who had been an image analyst during the first Gulf War. It was an interesting exercise for him until one day after we had bombed an oil well, and he zoomed in as far as his technology would allow, and he realized that all these little specks on the ground around the oil well were human beings who'd been killed in that one explosion. And that's when he started to apply for conscientious objector status. It would be interesting at some point to do a Freedom of Information Act to try to find out how many alumni of drone programs file for conscientious objector, and also how many graduates of drone programs end up committing suicide. You know, Veterans for Peace was founded 10 years after the last troops left Vietnam. And it took about those 10 years for vets to really come to grips with what they've been participating in, not to try to bury it in their mind. So it'd be interesting to see if we start seeing more veterans coming back into the peace movement. We certainly need them.
That's for sure. That's for sure. So when the protest is happening, and it's Holloman, is it an Air Force base?
It is.
It is, okay. Holloman Air Force Base. And you're going to be somewhere close to the base, so the people driving in to the base, what are you trying to accomplish? What are you trying to accomplish there?
Well, there are three audiences, in effect. There's the general public driving by. There are the military personnel. Obviously, we're trying to influence and encourage. I mean, that's one of the strategic values of doing it at this training base, is that there are people who are going to be driving by who still have a chance, you know, to decide, no, this training isn't for me. But otherwise, even the support personnel, to know that there is resistance to the program. And then the third potential audience, of course, is the media. We'd like to get the word out beyond those who are in visual contact with us at the site.
Mm-hmm. So what would a person, if somebody's being trained, and I was shocked, and I think it was you, Toby, who said that 600 people are going to be trained at this
every year,
every year. And good gracious, that kind of indicates just the amount of drones that we have in the air by all the people they need to train.
So, and this is only one training base. There's, I don't know how many total, but they're across, all across the country. There's multiple training bases. So add that up. Yeah.
And part of the reason for that large number is that the attrition rate is pretty high. And I don't know what the figures are now, But back in 2015, 2016, 2017, they actually had to pull students out of the program before they were completed because they didn't have enough operators on the operations team to fly the number of drones they had.
Good gracious. And they
were also pulling the trainers themselves because they didn't have enough. So they had to put the trainers back in the program. And we'd already been going to Creech for like 7 years, twice a year for a week at a time. And I feel like that's direct evidence that our presence has influenced the turnover, that we help the young airmen and airwomen to realize that what they're participating in is not acceptable. And so I feel like that's why we should keep doing this work, why we should expand it to other drone bases. And
So you're hoping general public, for the most part, they're asleep. You're hoping to just get a flicker of their awareness. You're hoping to get the media aware, but it sounds to me like you could have the biggest impact by just getting the trainees to say, I don't think so.
That's right. And because it's a training base, we want to influence the new recruits, because the ones that have been in the Air Force for 10 or 15 years, they're less likely to be influenced because they've been indoctrinated a long time. Mm-hmm. But the young airmen are less indoctrinated. And I also want to say that we're going to do our best to put the word out in the community of Alamogordo, which is just down the highway, about our panel, about our film screenings, and to encourage, because it's a very, very pro-military community. We want them to come. We want them to find out more about the drone program. We want them to find out about the harmful effects of the nuclear weapons industry and how it's harmed the local community in New Mexico. And really, we need to change the public's opinion. But you know, another audience that Ken didn't mention is the US government and government officials. The more they hear from us, the more hopefully they themselves will realize they shouldn't participate. And maybe we can contribute to a dropout rate for the higher officials that should retire, you know, from the whole business.
Yeah. So very, very good. Who's going to be on the panel?
Ken, do you want to give a word on that?
Or is it secret?
Now, as Toby mentioned, one of the panelists, Manuel Pino, is a member of the Acoma Nation, Acoma Pueblo in New Mexico, with extensive research and experience in the problems accompanying the entire nuclear cycle. Another one is
Bernice Gutierrez.
Bernice, I was trying to think of her first name. Bernice Gutierrez, who is a downwinder. Family was downwind of the Trinity test, and so be speaking about the experience of those exposed to radioactivity. Let's see, third member is, who will actually probably be the final speaker, is Four Arrows, who is a terrific Native spiritual leader that Veterans for Peace, who attended the last convention, were introduced to Four Arrows. And Toby is going to be on the panel as the person most experienced with the shutdown Creech efforts, and a recent probable addition. I just sent Toby an email about this morning. She may not even have seen it yet, but I was speaking with Nick Mothern this morning, who was saying, looked like we needed more drone on the panel, and he was volunteering his service. I accepted. He's trying to make his travel arrangements now, and I would say it's at least a 90% chance that he will be on the panel as well.
That is fantastic news, Ken. Thank you.
It's obvious that when you talk about drone, the drone program, it's not just the drone itself and the drone program, because it does expand into militarism, into nuclear weapons, into our geopolitical misdeeds with regard to the Pacific. So what you're doing is, drone focused, but it really has a global effect.
Yeah, and as you know, the U.S. and these other major countries keep militarizing our planet more and more, we face a huge consequence of climate, the climate crisis and climate chaos. And the military is the biggest contributor to that problem on the earth. So the U.S. military, there's so many reasons why we need to demilitarize the earth, not increase the militarization of the earth. And so that's another reason why we're there. And when we do our vigils, we have themes. So one of our themes is connecting the dots between militarism and the damage to the environment and the climate. But the other thing I didn't share, we have some exciting musical guests that have accepted our invitation. Emma's Revolution, for those who don't know Emma's Revolution, it's a duo, two wonderful singers and songwriters who are also social activists, and they show up at important events, and they're beautiful singers. So we're very excited. They're going to be singing at our panel and probably at least one other activity we haven't figured out yet. But whoever chooses to come out to shut down drone warfare in southern New Mexico will not be disappointed. We have some wonderful things planned.
Excellent.
There's one other thing I'd like to throw in here, get people thinking, I suppose. And that is, over the past several decades, there's been lots of attention given to the dangers of nuclear proliferation. And that is indeed a huge danger. What I think is only beginning to show itself over the horizon is the danger of drone proliferation. Because if you look at it, there are so many players getting into the game. You know, what's going on in Ukraine, missiles are coming from Iran, missiles are coming from Turkey, as well as the United States, Russia, and so forth. And it doesn't take all that much sophistication, engineering, industrial capability to create drones. Just about any nasty group could do it. And you can, you know, it wouldn't surprise me at all within the next few years to see drone terrorism proliferating, following the example of the United States, launching drones all over the world.
Yeah, when you said nasty.
And
I was just going to make this snide remark. When you said nasty, I thought, well, that's United States. we lead the world in nasty. I can't let anybody. Toby sent me something about the Supreme Court accountability of border killing of a teenager.
Yes.
What did you want to mention about that before?
Well, I tried to find my notes on it, so I'm going to just have to paraphrase it as I remember. And I certainly wish I knew remember the name, but there was a teenager in Juarez, Mexico, at the border years and years ago. I don't know exactly how many. He was another one of, I don't know how many teens now that have been killed by the Border Patrol for throwing rocks. Just like in Israel, when the Palestinians throw rocks, the Israeli Defense Forces kill them. Mm-hmm. Our Border Patrol do the same. So this family of this man, this young teenager, had a long legal battle fighting for justice and accountability for the killing of their son. And ultimately, it led up to a Supreme Court case. The case went to the Supreme Court. And what I found out from this book I read is that one of the justices whose vote cited against giving reparations to the family for the killing of this young boy was that it would open the door for legal lawsuits, battles for the victims of our drone strikes. And I hadn't heard that before. I just read this in a book about the South, Southern New Mexico, and I haven't had time to research the case, but that a justice would be actually be so, a judge would be so honest, a Supreme Court justice judge would be so honest to actually say that openly. That sounds like something that would be discussed behind closed doors, but he had no shame that we can't give reparations to a young boy who's murdered by Border Patrol, because then we have to give reparations to our civilian drone victims around the world. This is the country that we are, and Americans, you know, we have a responsibility. This is our tax dollars that is doing this. Mm-hmm. We should step up. I hope some of the listeners will think about coming to New Mexico, and if they can't come this spring in April, maybe they can join us another time. You can write to us, get on our mailing list, and help this important resistance grow and expand.
And where can we find more information? Again, the website?
Ken?
ShutdownDroneWarfare.org.
And it's all one word. It's ShutdownDroneWarfare.org.
That's it.
Very good. Very good. What else should everybody know before we let you go? Because I know you guys still have a lot of preparation. And I think, Ken, you mentioned you've got another Zoom in a little while. And so Toby is always busy. So what else would you want the audience to hear? Because I'm looking over my notes and we covered most of it, at least a little bit.
I'd like to share, you know, what motivates me personally to do this work is a number of things. Partly it's the mother in me, you know, seeing these children being killed by remotely controlled weapons. It's totally intolerable to me. But also, what also motivates me is I look at history. I always think that it's important to look back at history. And if we look at social movements, it's actually clear that the social movements that are successful, and there's a whole book written about this woman did research and studied, the social and political movements that have been most successful are the nonviolent ones. And in our own American history, the civil rights movement is a perfect case of that. People stepped up to the plate, blacks and whites together, nonviolently, sitting at lunch counters to oppose the Jim Crow laws in the South, and riding the freedom buses that to challenge the segregation on the buses, and the bus boycott in Montgomery, Alabama, that went on for over a year. These are really important parts of our American history that should guide us in where, if we want to build a better world, how we should go about it. And so when you come to shut down drone warfare in New Mexico this spring, you're not required to block the roads to keep for the day to keep the military from entering the base. You can actually do all kinds of things. You can be a legal observer, you can be a peacekeeper, you can just help hold signs, you can try to get leaflets to the cars that are backing up because of our peaceful blockade, to try to encourage the military to accept our leaflets so they can understand why we're doing this. There's many other roles you can play. You don't have to risk being arrested and going to jail.
All right, very good.
Yeah.
And does Holloman know you're coming?
Yes, Holloman knows you're coming. In fact, I got a very pleasant email from the Holloman PR officer and asking me to call, which I intend to do, if not today, then tomorrow, just to have a conversation with her and emphasizing our nonviolence. The email offered to said they want to help us have a safe and secure protest area. And I intend to inform her that we will welcome her advice on where it would be safe and secure, but we will not be bound on it, that we will not observe a so-called free speech zone that for us, the United States is supposed to be a free speech zone.
Yeah, very good. Because I could see you corralled or kettled in some field in the bottom of a valley and out of sight of everybody if you leave it up to the military to help you out.
No, well, one of our colleagues, Greg Condon, who is the president of the Santa Fe chapter, has done some research with the Bureau of Land Management and was able to get mapping of what is the base boundary and what is public land. And so we will not be intruding on the base boundary, which means that it won't be subject to military police. And we've already talked to the sheriff's department, and they've been very cooperative. So, I think it's going to be a good time.
Good time. Good times were had by all.
So. Yeah, and I'd like to add, too, that people don't have to come for the whole week. Not everyone can manage to be away from their home and their jobs for a whole week. You can come just for a couple days. So that's always the flexibility in it as well.
All right. Very good. We'll
remind people that for those flying in, El Paso is the closest airport, and we will be providing transportation from the airport to the Camp Justice, as we call it, the area.
So let's just make sure we got the logistics. So they will have transportation from the airport for that hour and a half drive. There right. will be food. There will be camping type lodging.
And people can choose to stay in motels if they're, for whatever reason, they're unable to camp. Okay. There's a motel not too far away, and it's close to the base as well. Or there are many motels in Alamogordo, I should say. Yeah. And we will take people back to the airport when they're ready to go. So we guarantee rides from the airport and back to the airport.
So it sounds like all people have to do is show up.
Right.
Excellent. Excellent. So
that's 90% of winning.
That's 90% of winning. So any last words, Ken, and then Toby, and I'll let you guys go.
I'll just give you, I appreciate you giving us the opportunity to inform the public.
And Toby, any last words?
Well, I was recently informed about why this new film about Julian Assange, who is a journalist publisher that's being held in a British prison because of the United States, why this documentary is called Ithaca. And his brother was speaking and said, I don't know the exact roots of it, but it has something to do with the fact that it's the journey, not the end, that matters. So for us, we may not end ultimately drone warfare, but the journey and the thing that the small things that come from it are worthwhile and make this work worth it. But hopefully our vision will come one day. Maybe there'll be young people carrying it on when we leave the planet, and eventually we can really demilitarize the earth.
So. Yeah, because you mentioned the civil rights movement, and people think of the civil rights movement as being this chunk of time in the 60s, but it actually was going along in the 50s, early into the 50s and then on through the 60s and then on. And as we can tell, that continues still, and it's still a fight. So
perfect example.
So, well, good luck with the journey, Toby. Good luck.
Thank you so much.
And
it's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure.
Always. So we will leave it there. And thanks to Toby, Anne, and Ken. And consider these protests have been going on for 17 years. So please go to www.shutdowndronewarfare.org. It is an extensive website that gives you all you need to attend and support their efforts to bring attention to the danger of drones, not only to the people, the civilians, the children being killed by drones, but also the people doing the killing, the young people doing the killing. So Once again, www.shutdowndronewarfare.org. Thanks. Have a safe week.